You're listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast, your weekly podcast looking at all things Warhammer.
Welcome to our Christmas podcast. This is the last podcast of the year from us here at Sprues and Brews. It's a very festive edition of this week's podcast.
It is. The lights are on the tree. There's crackers on the side. It's all very nice, isn't it?
It is indeed. So my name is Dave. I'm joined once again by Matt.
Hello.
And Jay.
Yo.
So on this Christmassy edition of the Sprues and Brews podcast, we're going to be talking about our favourite sprue and brew from the year.
It's a classic.
We're also going to be discussing the Slaves to Darkness Battle Tome, which was released last week. And coincidentally, we'll also be talking about our exploits on Warhammer Live this past week, where you used the Slaves to Darkness book map against my Auric War Clans. So that is all to come. We've also got your top threes towards the end of the podcast. And then that's it. We'll be wrapping up until 2020, as we're going to have a bit of a break during the Christmas period.
Frantically painting
a break
models.
From podcasting, but not a break from Warhammer.
Oh, heck no. No, there's lots of Warhammer to be happening in the next couple of weeks. But what Warhammer has been going on in the past, well, week and a bit since the last podcast? This has been recorded a little bit late because there's been lots of Christmas meals and Star Wars films being released.
And Warhammer Live.
So, Matt, what have you been doing in the hobby for the past week and a bit?
I've managed to do quite a bit in the last week. Because we were due on Warhammer Live to play some games and roll some dice, I painted up the new Endless Spells for the Slaves of Darkness. And I have to say, they're a really nice kit. I am seeing potential with this kit for converting Chaos Knights.
Oh, right.
With all these spikes are separate pieces, so you can have them coming out of like the shoulder pads and the carapace.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Big demonic face mounted on it somewhere.
When you said Chaos Knights, I thought you meant like the Chaos Knights on horses. Okay. So I was thinking, what? What's he thinking
the
there?
Big stumpy
you mean,
ones.
You mean the 40k Chaos Knights, yeah.
So yeah, they're really cool. So they're built and painted. I built up the easy build Chaos Lord and Karak Drak, I think he's called, the big lizard.
Yeah.
It's a really nice model, but because it's push fit, it's a bit fiddly to build.
Right, okay.
You could cut off all the pins and just glue it, but yeah, it's... A little bit fiddly, but it looks really nice. I haven't built the other guys yet.
Most important thing, which head did you give him?
I gave him the helmetless head.
Oh, okay. Personally, I think that's the wrong choice, but... it's right.
And I built some Necromunda, because we're going to be going big into Necromunda next year.
Yes,
so I built all my bounty hunters and worked out a list. So I've got like 7 guys in 1,000 credits, which I thought was quite small, but then you're... Gene Steeler Cult Army you wrote is a similar size, isn't it?
7 and a little familiar.
Yeah, and I think to be fair, your enforcers are going to be quite.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not writing any list for the enforcers yet. I'm still building them. I'm halfway through building them.
But yeah, really impressed with the Necromunda Bounty Hunter figures. If you've not played the Bounty Hunter game, you can obviously use the guys as like star players for Blood Bowl, where you pay a amount of credits and you can use them for one game. Or the Bounty Hunter rules, you essentially get a set of different profiles. You pick one to represent it. And can use any model from the range. So it lets you use your bounty hunters as bounty hunters with similar names and similar equipment, but it's not that exact bounty hunter from the profile.
Yeah.
Equally, you can also convert up the plastic kits as well, and there's rules for having them being from Delac, Escher, whatever. So
cool.
It's really cool. And I've also been doing a bit more work on the Zone Mortalis scenery. Some of the stuff with kind of stairs and platforms, and they look really good, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They look really good. Very, very impressed by that scenery. One of the reasons that we're really giving Necromunda a go, finally.
Yeah.
After months, years of saying we need to try it.
We're on it now.
So, that's really cool. Jay, what have you been doing in the hobby for the past 7 or so days?
I have been painting Ultramarines, actually.
Cool.
So, I've started painting a lot of infantry. And I painted and finished painting the Repulsor Executioner.
Cool.
So I'm thinking about bringing these guys to Warhammer World, so I thought I'd put some paint on them.
But it doesn't sound like it's going to be just Ultramarines.
This is
going
to be Ultramarines and Adeptus Custodes, I think.
That's a very powerful combination.
So I'm going to have the Primarch in there with some Custodian Honor Guard and then part of his chapter fighting with him. It gives me, covers all bases, and I've got a bit of psychic defense. I've got some anti-tank in the Repulsor. I've got my close combat Gulliman and the Custodians. I've got some deep striking units, so I think I've got a good mix of units to take.
Excellent.
And it's all painted as well, which will look good, because you can't go to Warhammer World without a painted on.
No.
We say that. I mean, I'm trying my best not to go to Warhammer World with an unpainted army, but I think everything will be painted, depending on what I take. For me, it was all about getting my Orc War Clans ready for the stream. I was nearly there on the last podcast. Well, I got it all done quite easily. All the bases were done. All the Savage Orcs were finished. And I touched up a few of the other older guys we did as part of the Contrast Challenge. So they were all finished, and that's really it for me in the hobby. Although I have built a new addition to my New Year army. So I went in while we were at Warhammer World. I bought myself a Nexus.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh,
for 40K, because it's yeah. It's Warhammer, cool model, it's a Warhammer it? World yeah. on his little hologram thing. So I built and sprayed him.
How'd you find building him?
Fine. I thought it was going to be a right pain putting that little hologram table thing, yeah. But no, it was fine.
That's probably the most fragile bit. The stand of it.
Yeah. No, it was fine. And I have also because I bought a Gene Stealer Cult upgrade pack. Slap some little icons onto my Shadow Sword. Ooh. And sprayed that as well. So that's been sprayed, so that's ready to be painted.
Excellent.
I've got a pretty straightforward paint scheme for that, and I think I'll do all my Gene Steel Cult vehicles like that.
Are you planning on bringing that to Warhammer World then?
I need to speak to you actually, Matt, because I may have to use some of your Gene Steel Cult. Well, I will have to borrow some of your Gene Steel
Cult. I'm sure
Cults.
I can arrange that.
And I might take my Tyranids as a detachment with them.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
Swarmlord left me could definitely be going.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's me. Right, we have still got quite a lot to cover on this week's podcast, but we're going to take a pause, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about mine and Matt's adventure at Warhammer World and the live stream. Before that slight pause, you may have noticed I said we were going to talk about Warhammer Live next. I just wanted to trick y'all. Yeah. We're going to do the news first, because that's how this podcast rolls.
That is how it normally rolls, yeah. Don't like change.
Jay was talking some heresy and saying, why don't we just do the Warhammer Live section next and do the news after it? Nah, that's just going to throw everybody off. That's not how we do things. So, Matt, have we got any news this
week? We have got some news. So, you may have noticed that we didn't have much in the way of a pre-order boost on Saturday.
No.
That is because this week's release is a Warhammer Store exclusive between the 26th and the 29th of December for Adeptus Mechanicus Grim Brundle, the White Dwarf.
Yep.
This is pretty cool, isn't it?
So if you weren't tempted by the Ornithopters, whatever they're called, the Mechanicus Flyers, yeah, to start Mechanicus Army, surely now you must be pushed over the edge after seeing this model.
It's a really cool model, isn't it?
It's very cool. I can't wait to get him. He's going to be ace.
It has a Servitor Black Gobbo as well,
mm-hmm,
which is pretty cool.
A beard made of mecha tendrils, whatever called.
Yeah, and you see you've got the little legs like Call. It's such a cool model.
Yeah.
It's similar to the Red Gobbo. I imagine it's probably going to get Warhammer Legends rules, but I'm sure you could run it as something in an ad mech list.
A tech priest.
Just
use him as a tech priest.
Fair enough.
I probably will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, yeah, so he is only available from Boxing Day till the 29th. Luckily, we're at Warhammer World over that stretch, so we'll be picking one up. If your store does run out of stock, they will order one in for you if you're in store during that period. Once you hit the 30th of December, though, you've lost your chance, unfortunately.
eBay for 150
quid. Yeah, or eBay for silly yeah money.
Yeah, looking forward to Sky. First White Dwarf for a while as well.
It is. They used to be subscriber models back in the day, and then done it for a while. When they reissued White Dwarf, it was a bit of a cop-out, because it was an old...
It was the old Unforged.
Old Unforged model,
yeah,
just painted differently,
yeah, which is a shame. Different coloured trousers on. A different colour beard.
Yeah. So, yeah, nice to see another White Dwarf model. And that's two limited models we've had over the Christmas period.
Yeah.
Is that exclusive model overkill, do we think? Or is it quite nice to have these?
No, I don't think so. And I think you've got enough time to get them. And they're easy, you know, they're fairly straightforward to get hold of.
Yeah.
Unless you live in the middle of nowhere with your nearest Warhammer store being miles away.
Yeah, you're out of luck then, unfortunately. But, yeah. And a lot of stuff pointing to a sizeable Adeptus Mechanicus release in the new year as well, I think.
I do think their book isn't great compared to, even at the time, like the codexes we were getting. I mean, now they're really good.
Yeah.
But I always felt that the AdMech one was a little bit
Underwhelming.
Could we see... well, probably not, actually, but it would be nice to maybe see some of the Forge World stuff coming appearing in the Admech book.
Don't think we'll ever have Forge World models in a...
Unless something happens with Forge World, which we know has sort of been on the
cards. I think you'd be more likely to have either rules on Warhammer Community or a separate book.
Like they do for the Adeptus Custodes on Forge World stuff.
A previous seminar, I queried this and said they're not going to do that because the Codex should have everything you can buy in a store.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you have Forge World stuff you can't. What I do think we will see, though, is some new kits that we haven't seen yet. There has been some whisperings on the internet of a new heavy infantry that's mentioned in some of the designs of the, what's the new transport called? The Scorpius.
Yeah.
Mentioned a Hecker Trek or something, a new heavy infantry that would take two slots rather than one. Oh, wow. So that'd be interesting to see.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that could be really good. They need to release the guy from Kill Team separate to give you another HQ choice. Because that's good, because obviously you've got Call as your own, the only special character. Then you've got your Tech Priest, the Tech Priest from Kill Team, and an Engine Seer. That's your HQ. So they're very samey.
Yeah.
At least now they've got two Tech Priests. You know, you've got different models being used.
Yeah.
Do you think we'll see a book for these then, outside of the Psychic Awakening?
Yeah, I think we'll see a full Codex for them in the new year with some new kits, personally. I might be wrong, but... I think we will do.
Yeah. They were one of the early ones, weren't they? So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So so that is all the Games Workshop, I say pre-orders, models that have come in. Forge World also had the Macro Gatling Blaster for the 40k scale Warlord Titan at £92. This was recently seen on the Titanicus kits, and with their CAD wizardry, I guess, it's going to be dead easy to scale up and scale down some of these Titan weapons these days.
Just plus and minus, make 100% bigger.
Yeah, which hopefully means that we'll see the other happen and the Warbringer Titan appear in Titanicus, because that's an Ace Titan.
It's a cool time. So the Blood Angels models as well. Was that the week before, I think?
They were on last week's show. We had the new Dawnbreakers as well, which looked really cool. In other news, the Age of Sigmar Big December FAQs have dropped. These have got changes. There's FAQs from most armies.
Mm-hmm.
There's quite a few points adjustments across the board as well. Mm-hmm. Just bringing some of those that might have missed out a little bit in the General's Handbook points adjustments back in line with everything else.
Yeah.
As an Eidolith player, all the Eidolons and Sharks and Turtles have come down in points. On my army that I brought to the last Unicorns event, essentially I can take an extra unit of Eels, which is pretty excellent. Cool. The army that's been hit the most by these, though, is Slaanesh.
As we expected.
Now, they have been... Their win ratio has been way out of whack of every other army. They are very strong and very powerful. There's been no point adjustments for them. What they've done is made the Always Strikes Last mechanic slightly less effective, so it's on a 4+ rather than a 3.
2+ for a greater demon, yeah.
It was a 2+ for a greater demon, and 4+ for standard, wasn't it? It's gone down to 5+ standard and 3+ for a greater demon.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Just to make it less reliable, because let's face it, a 2+, it's going off most of the time, isn't it? A 3+ gives you a bit more chance for it to not go off.
Yeah.
And all of the summoning costs have gone up quite considerably, which is good.
I can't believe it got out of the doors like that. I don't know. I mean, when Age of Sigmar was sort of like sold initially, it was supposed to be the most playtested, most balanced rule set they've got, and yet you still get books like Slaanesh coming out and just completely turn everything upside down. Obviously, it wasn't playtested very thoroughly.
Though, if you remember, when the book came out, people wrote off Keepers of Secrets, saying, oh, they're too expensive, they're rubbish, and then people kind of then min-max the list and eventually got to the point where get as many Keeper of Secrets in and rely on summoning everything else in.
Yeah. I think the changes need to be made, and to be honest, I mean, I'm not part of any Slaanesh groups or anything on Facebook, but the general reaction on Facebook and Twitter and things seems to be they knew it was coming.
And I don't think they've hit them too hard either. They could have increased the points and done these changes. Yeah. I think...
Well, just incremental changes if something's working, testing.
It sounds like it's been a very positive FAQ.
Yeah.
I mean, from an Orc War Clan's perspective, they made a rules clarification on the Ardfist battalion, which allowed you to bring back a unit of Ard Boys.
Mm-hmm.
It no longer stacks, it's one use only. Quite a few people have whinged at that. But Aside from that, I mean, the Plague Monks, they got a brand new War Scroll, which has been well received.
Plague Monks were, again, very, very strong. Every time you killed one, they could splash back mortal wounds. But that's been reworked a bit now, I think.
And they're a lot more streamlined in, like, the rules. So, yeah, I think most people have reacted quite positively to that as well.
One big thing that's kind of been addressed as well is the, what do we call it, activation wars of who goes first. They have... Now, it's always... I think it's always been intended, but it's never been fully clarified, that there is now a stack, essentially, like Magic the Gathering. Yeah. So if you have an effect that happens in the hero phase, and Dave has an effect that happens in the charge phase, his will go to the top of that stack.
Well, let's take the perfect example, is Slaanesh and the Overstrike's last in smashing and bashing from the Iron Jaws. So a lot of people have been playing like this anyway. But if your Keeper of Secrets makes my unit of Ardboy strike last, but then I have a unit of Auric Brutes, which have just killed something in combat, and smashing and bashing kicks in, because that's activated after the Slaanesh player has made my unit go last,
immediately goes
I can go, right, my Ardboy's going to go next then, and then they can fight. So that's really cool. Especially if, I mean, if I go back to Iron Jaws, that's a really good bonus.
Yeah, and like you say, that's always... I think it's always been intended, but it's never been defined. So now there is a stack. The more recent an ability kicks in, it takes priority.
Yeah.
Which is good. Which means that you can counter those Always Strikes First armies as well, with your own shenanigans in your phase.
Yeah. And there's still some tactics there, because if you're the Slaanesh player in that situation, there is no guarantees my Auric Brutes are going to kill something.
Yeah.
So you're having to... you're having to have to make the other player think about their combats. So, I think it works.
I think on the whole, it's gone down well across the community as well.
Yeah.
I got a free tree load out of mine.
You did? You had quite considerable points cuts for the Sylvaness.
My Purple Sparkly Unicorns list saved 170 points. So I'm thinking about dropping the Endless Spell, which didn't do much for me during the tournament, and that's then 200 points tree load.
I noticed that the Stormcast Dragon came down, the Star Drake. So I had got a list that I was tempted to take onto Warhammer Live, which was Stardrake and Gotrek.
Nice.
I've now got, I think it's 60 or 70 points spare in that list now.
Okay, that's
because,
good.
Because of that dragon coming down in points, so that's cool.
I had a dream last night, actually.
I had a dream last night
about the Purple Sparkling Unicorns event in January. And in my dream, I took all dwarfs. It's because I've been playing Warhammer Total War as dwarfs. I took all dwarfs. And then I woke up in the morning and I was thinking, I could take Gotrek and just flesh out some Iron Breakers and Iron Drakes.
I think that'd be really cool.
Because Iron Breakers and Iron Drakes, they're not that hard to paint.
No.
So, we've got till the end of January. Half tempted.
Do it. That'd be really
Gotrek
cool.
Gotrek and a load of dwarfs.
Would you do it as a City of Sigmar?
I guess so. I've not looked at the City of Sigmar rules very well. But it would just be pure dwarfs.
If you did them as Tempest's Keep, they'd get +1 save and the ability to run and charge on the first turn, I believe. Something like that.
Oh, look. See what the best one for the dwarfs are.
Yeah. Excellent stuff. So that wraps up on news, I guess.
Yeah, not much news. Now, stay tuned to Warhammer Community over Christmas, because I think they'll be dropping a few reveals on Christmas Day.
Yeah, I think they have pretty much come out and said. And they could potentially... we've still been doing those Advent calendar reveals over on our YouTube channel. We don't know what the last one's going to be, and we don't know if there's something there.
Yes, and unfortunately for when we're definitely recording this on the same day, it might be out of context of what they reveal on that day, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see.
That makes no sense.
That makes no sense. Right, that is the news done. So... we can talk about Warhammer Live next.
We can.
Let's take a pause and come back. So this Wednesday just gone, myself and Matt travelled up to Warhammer World for a day of hobbying, resulting in us playing on the Warhammer Live Twitch stream, the official Twitch stream for all things Warhammer.
I have to say, a Wednesday is a great day to go to Warhammer World and play some games. It was really quiet.
It was a really fun day. We got to see quite a few guys from the studio.
Ben Johnson
came down. We also had a visit from Superfan Ray.
Yes, well, so Ray turned up, said hello. We were chatting about the Rohan scene. He's like, oh, do you know they've got two boxes of the big, massive, super value discount box in the shop? I was like, have they? Because it sold out super quickly.
Super fan salesman, Ray.
Super fan salesman, Ray, yes.
Got a sale there.
So needless to say, I escaped and picked one up because you got six of the houses and two of the wall sets, which I think about 40 quid each for a fraction of that price.
Yeah.
Which is really good.
And having just watched all three Hobbit films with my son, getting ready to now, he wants to watch Lord of the Rings. Oh, this is what I've been waiting for. I am now really, really excited to play some Lord of the Rings, especially if Matt's got the Rohan scenery.
Well, I think over our Christmas visit to Warhammer World, we'll probably all end up with some Lord of the Rings bits, I think. Yeah. I definitely want the new Rohan book, and I think I'm going to have to get Gandalf on cart for my Hobbits as well.
Oh yeah, you were tempted to get him on Wednesday, actually.
But I ended up buying a load of scenery.
Oh, you did, yes. That's
but, great. You know, as far as I'm concerned, the scenery makes the game, doesn't it?
Yeah, so definitely.
I'd like to have a different collection. So yeah, so Ray came on, managed to do the quickest sale ever, said hello. Yeah, we saw Ben Johnson, who I think his advice to you was just kill Archeon, wasn't it?
It was, just kill Archeon, yeah.
Which is good advice.
But after the warm-up games, I soon realised that that was the best plan.
Yeah, definitely. And Ben Bailey came and said hi and wondered why you weren't attacking things in the face with your Maw Crusher.
Well, when we start talking about the games, I will explain what my thinking was behind the tactics I employed. And okay, we'll go on to that.
So let's go on the games. We had a couple of practice games while we were there to warm up for the big event.
Yeah. So bearing in mind, up until this Wednesday, I had gone unbeaten with my big war.
You had?
So our first practice game was Knife to the Heart.
Which is a hard one for the Everchosen, because there's so few of them.
It was, yes. So we set up, you chose to go first.
I did. Chose to go first, because we were quite close to each other.
Or did you on Knife to the Heart, actually?
No, I think it went first.
I was quite reserved with my Maw Crusher and units. The short story out of this is my Maw Crusher ended up having to... My plan for the Maw Crusher is to make sure he gets the charge on Archeon. Because if Archeon hits him first, unless he gets really lucky with his amulet saves, he's gonna die. And he's my best chance of taking Archeon down. My whole plan for the day was to use him to counter Archeon. But in that first particular game, it just went horribly wrong for me on that flank. And your Varangard were just dishing out so much pain that my Maw Crusher had to. He was the last line of defence for my objective. So he had to charge the Varangard. And you know, he killed them, which is fine. But he took a couple of wounds in the process, allowed Archeon to then charge him, and of course, you know,
finish him off.
Unfortunately, you killed him. But I had no choice, because your Varangard were running riot. All I had left over on that flank was my Savage Aurochs, which were holding the objective, and my Prophet.
You couldn't really afford to move them off the objective, because otherwise you could just throw a unit of Varangard.
Yeah, because as soon as you've got both points, and the issue I had was to get your point. My brutes teleported over to the left flank, failed the charge, you then ran away, and then they were just trawling up the battlefield then, tried to get a charge off on your horrors, failed that charge as well. So I couldn't get at your point, and my Gorgonites died quite quickly as well.
Yeah, with the army, because I've got so few models, I tried to kind of keep one flank. I can't spread myself too thinly.
No.
But for this one, I thought, if I put a unit of Varangard on the right flank, just to try and draw out a few tasty units, because I'm pretty quick, I'll probably outrun you,
mm-hmm.
and then draw them back towards the Gaunt Summoner, who had summoned a unit of Pink Horrors just to sit on this objective and blast anything that got near.
Yeah.
And, if you'd have managed to get that charge off, I think it would have gone a lot differently, but because you failed it...
Yeah, if my brutes had made that first charge, it would have slingshotted them up that flank, and I'd have been much closer to your objective. And, you know, brutes are made for killing Varangard, because they get all the bonuses for fighting stuff with that good of an armour save. But it didn't happen, unfortunately.
Once the Maw Crusher had died, I'd kind of gone all in with my chips, because there was a moment where I'd basically committed to getting your objective, but left a small window for your guys to make a really long charge. If they'd have made it, you'd have probably won the game on that turn.
Yeah.
And they failed the charge, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is unlucky for you.
That's how I roll, isn't it, with charges.
Yeah, you failed a charge.
I know, shocking, isn't it? And so I did unfortunately lose that one because Archaon and a unit of Varangard that was left finished off the Savage Aurochs. They folded under the amount of attacks that Archaon chucks out. And I think I'd failed to cast the plus one save on them as well.
Yeah.
So they were super squishy. I think you may have been auto wounding them, so I was just getting my 6 plus like feel no pain saves.
Yeah, and there's a lot of saves to make.
Yeah,
especially when I buffed up unit of Varangard.
So that was Matt's first victory against my Big War. So that made things interesting going into the second practice game, which I'm struggling to remember.
Battle for the Pass,
that was it. Matt, you were incredibly ballsy on this one.
Yeah,
you literally threw everything forward. So I decided, because normally I like to have gained all my war points before, you know, getting my plus one to hit and wound before I start throwing units out. But I saw Matt's, you know, charging out from his deployment. So I did the same and just went all out. Mawcrusher went flying forwards. I teleported a unit of brutes forward as well. And yeah, there was lots of charges.
So yeah, straight off. Every possibility I had the chance to do so, I used the ability that Archaon's got to see who gets the next turn.
Yeah.
Now, knowing that I was about to be hit with a double turn from you, I thought if I go super aggressive, you might turtle up a bit and then realise, ah, okay, I need to correct it now in your turn.
Yeah.
You managed to see through that bluff and just went for it.
Yeah. Saying that, though, I mean, I killed Archaon. Not straight away. I think it took my second turn to finish him off, and I think Archaon killed the Mawcrusher as he died, which is such a good ability, that is, especially on somebody like Archaon. And what also helped him on that was it that mission where you use the realm spell to make him plus one to, no, reroll saves, was it? Was
reroll saves one? Yeah.
So yeah, it was quite a close game, but I did in the end run away with it. I think I tabled you, in fact.
You did, but the points were very, very close.
Yeah. I managed to kill all the Varangard. And Savage Aurochs spreading themselves out. And a massive unit of orcs helps with capturing multiple objectives.
The highlight of that match was a unit of Furies who had been harassing the two-point objective in the middle.
Yeah.
You charged them with some brutes and then just made sure there was enough models around it so they couldn't get anywhere within distance of this objective that you wanted to keep, and I was like, "Whoa!" But you haven't got the objective at your far back, and they just flew off and stole that one.
Yeah,
because they're annoying.
Yeah, that nabbed you 4 points. There was nothing I could do about that. I didn't even see that coming. I was just trying to stop you from having more models than me on that centre objective, completely forgetting that you could just fly off and grab that one.
Well, Archaon versus Mawcrusher in the middle, and I thought those brutes plus whatever the unit was in that fight could be the tip that needs, you know, to kill Archaon and put it in the orc's favour. So I thought, if I can try and make you commit as many things to these
I think Furies. it was the Ard Boys that finished Archaon off, wasn't it?
It was,
you charged in with the Mawcrusher and dealt the final couple of wounds that was needed to kill him. So yeah, it was a close game. It was good to get another win, though. But it did set us up quite nicely for the live stream, because it was one apiece on the day. So yeah, it was really good seeing Wade. Wade and Ben Bailey commentated with Ralph on the camera.
Raph.
What did I say, Ralph?
You said Ralph.
Sorry. It's the first time I've been in the new studios.
Mm.
Very cool, very toasty.
It was very toasty. We were in the little room.
Yeah.
I think it's all a bit busy over Christmas.
We'd agreed prior to the day that we'd be playing in the Realm of Akshi, the Realm of Fire. We were going to be playing Shifting Objectives, which is the one where you have three objectives along the centre line of the board. Each battle round, one of those is worth 3 points, whereas the other two are worth just the one. So you roll a d3 at the beginning of the battle round. Now, like with all my games of the Big War against Archaon so far, I didn't want to send my Mawcrusher going out straight away to fight Archaon, to fight Varangard or Archaon, because I wanted him to get his buffs. I wanted to be able to almost ensure I got at least nearly a kill on Archaon. You gave me the first turn.
Mm-hmm. Should we go through what was in the lists first?
Oh yeah, that's probably a good idea, yes. Yeah.
So the host of the Everchosen, is it called? Yeah, the host of the Everchosen, one of the new legions out of Slaves of Darkness. I had Archaon with Binding Damnation, which forces you to fight last, which is really useful. And the Aura of Khorne, Blood for the Blood God. The Gaunt Summoner with the Hyper Snare Seeds. This can cause a unit within 8 inches to not be able to charge, which again gives me that bit more control on the flow of the battle. I don't think it ever came to effect in any of our games. Maybe one
game. Second practice game, yeah.
Whispers of Chaos, which is a really interesting spell. You roll the dice per model in the unit. Each 6 is a mortal wound. If you slay anyone, they cannot move until my next hero phase. Again, bit of control. And the Aura of Tzeentch. And then 3 units of 3 Varangards, 1 with each weapon combination, because that's the models I had. And then the 8-fold Doom Sigil, which you throw down, you count up the models that die within 12 inches, roll that many dice, and that many ever-chosen units get +1 attack to a maximum of 1.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Cool. So I had, leading my army, my general was my mega boss on Warcrusher. He had the Ethereal Amulet for that 3+ unrendable save. He had the Brutish Cunning trait, so he got a 3 Mighty Destroyers per turn to use as he wanted. And his mount had the Meenan trait, which was +1 damage with his fists and tail, giving him a flat 3 damage before any buffs. I then had a Wurgog Prophet with the Cunning Beast Spirit spell to give +1 save to my Savage Aurochs. I had an Auroch Weird Knob Shaman with a Shamanic skull Cap. God, I can't speak. that gives him +1 to cast. He also had the... flipping heck, what's going on with my voice? The Big Green Hand of Gorg, which allows me to teleport a unit, which is super handy in
this
army.
Very useful spell.
Very useful spell. I then, to finish off the leaders, I had 2 Auroch War Chanters, one with the Get 'em Beat for the 3d6 charge, and the second one had Fixing Beat for healing up any injured Aurochs. Moving on to battle line, I had a unit of 5 Auroch Brutes, a unit of 3 Auroch Gorgrunters, a unit of 10 Auroch Ardboys, and 30 Savage Aurochs with the spears for extra range on their attacks. I then had Iron Skulls Boys to finish off the model count. I had the Iron Fist Battalion, which allowed my Gorgrunter boss to become the big boss, giving him a couple of extra wounds, but more importantly, giving them another 3 Mighty Destroyers. And then finally, I've still never used this, my Gnashing Jaws Endless spell, because I had 30 points left over, and I thought, it gives me reason to paint that up and take that, but I never really had the opportune moment to cast it.
No.
Compared to other stuff that I wanted to cast. So, that was my list.
Awesome. I have to say that the board that the guys have set up was really nice as well. Themed to Akshi.
Yeah.
Rivers of lava.
Yeah.
Some big chaos spikes coming out of the board. That's one of the cool things about playing on the stream, isn't it? They do always go the extra mile for the tables.
Yeah.
And yeah, so deployment, I kind of kept to one very far corner of the board. It's kind of not extending as... very much just to make sure that I had some room before the Uruks came to me.
Mm-hmm.
You pretty much were able to cover your side of the board with whatever you wanted.
Yeah, so I had Iron Skulls Boys over on the left-hand flank, ready to grab that objective on the left. The Savage Uruks were towards the centre, along with the Mawcrusher, all of the other leaders, and then the Gorgrunters, Brutes and Ard Boys were kind of in a group, sort of centre to right flank. You gave me the first turn, because obviously you've had a much smaller model count than that, even with my battalion. So my plan was to not overextend myself. My Iron Skulls Boys tried to run up to the objective, couldn't quite get far enough to capture it in that first turn. The Savage Aurochs, I think, just moved up a little bit. The Mawcrusher stayed where it was, Lisa stayed where it was. My Gorgrunters, though, I wanted to make sure I at least got a point. So they used with Mighty Destroyers in their normal move, they quite comfortably got the central objective.
Yeah.
I did think to myself, they are going to get charged and probably killed by the Varangard. But my thinking was, that would mean you at least have a unit of Varangard in the centre of the board to be charged by my Ard Boys or my Brutes. So I could get that point back. But I wanted to make sure I at least had a point, because I didn't have anything quick enough to get to the right. Oh, I think I tried to cast
teleport your Brutes, didn't you?
But it failed. That didn't go off.
Critically, the far objective was the 3-pointer that turn as well, the one that the Savage Aurochs were running up towards.
Yeah, the Iron Skulls Boys were, what, an inch or two off capturing that? They weren't quite close enough, which is a shame. But I didn't want to use a command point to give you a free ability. Maybe I should have done. So that was my first turn.
Yeah, so with the Orcs not moving too far out, First of all, I had to see the future, see who had the turn, and as luck would be it, I knew I had a double turn, so I could afford to be super ballsy this turn. I sacrificed one of my summons to summon. Sorry, sacrificed one of my spellcast slots to summon a unit of harpies. They summon in the hero phase, which means they can move in the movement phase, and then with some shenanigans, I can get them to pretty much anywhere on the board with their ability to make a full move out of combat as that activation in combat.
Mm-hmm.
So what's that, a 36-inch move they can do essentially over the course of the game?
As long as they get a charge on something.
So summon them in position to slingshot off that unit of Gorgrunters to get the three-point objective. The Varangard roared forward, one on my near flank just to gain that objective, the other two to potentially charge the Gorgrunters, potentially extend further if I had to, while Archeon and the Gaunt Summon just moved forward into position so I could zap you with magic next turn, which I think was the critical thing in that turn too as well.
Mm-hmm.
Charge with the Furies. Charge with the two units of Varangard into the Gorgrunters. Archeon was quite happy sat where he was, as was the other unit of Varangard.
I think he just moved forward a little bit, didn't he?
Just to get into range to cast some spells. I think I'd put down... Oh, the Gaunt Summoner's other spell. He'd put down the...
Sigil.
The Archeon cast Inferno Blades on the Lance unit of Varangard to give him extra damage. And something else.
-1 to hit him.
Oh, -1 to hit him, yeah.
Yeah.
Into combat, I nearly activated with the Varangard first because I was concerned about losing any models. But I thought, no, we're going to stay on target here. Activated the Furies and just moved them. I was quite lucky, I think I got like an 11-inch charge with them.
Mm-hmm.
So just managed to move them straight onto that objective for 3 points.
Yeah.
You managed to hit back with your Gorgrunters. I think you wounded a Varangard.
I nearly killed one. I think I did 4... damage to it because they have 5 wounds each, don't
they? They do. In fact, you'd split them over the, because the two units were on you, so you put 4 wounds to go on one and 2 wounds on another, I think.
Yeah, so they did. I mean, at this point I'd not got the +1 to hit and wound because I'd not got enough war points, but no, yeah, they did okay. But yeah,
unfortunately the Varangard with lances went next,
battered them. Yeah,
and with that increased damage from Inferno Blades means they were doing 4 damage each, which is a heck of a lot of damage.
Yeah.
And I think them alone managed to kill the unit.
Well, you were hitting on 2s because of Archeon's +1 to hit when he's on the board for Varangard. I think you were extra to wound because you charged. So, yeah, you just absolutely
battered
those Gorgrunters. At this stage of the game, I had a feeling you were going next because you really had chucked everything forward.
Yeah.
And had I gone next, I would have been able to get every counter charge off that I wanted.
Yep.
And would have done a lot of damage. So I figured Matt's going to be going next here. And then straight away I was like, this is not going to go well. Because I know what your Varangard could do, but you just murdered my Gorgrunters.
Yeah.
So,
I've revealed the dice from the Mug of Destiny, and I was indeed going next. So at this point, it was 5-1, because you briefly had the middle objective in here. Again, I used my ability. I knew Dave was getting the double turn coming, so I had to do as much damage as I could this turn. I was considering falling back a bit and let you come for me, but I was fairly confident. If I get all my buffs on, those units of Varangard can just go through those units of Orcs.
Yeah.
I hadn't used any of my double piling abilities, so that was the tactic this turn, just do as much damage with the Varangard until you counterattack and draw out your more crusher to Archeon, because that showdown had to happen.
Yeah, it did.
So, yeah, essentially just rebuffed everyone, got Inferno Blades off on the Lance unit again, I think the Endless Spell was down, wasn't it? Got the -1 to hit on Archeon, made sure Archeon had my will be done on himself, just because I thought that at some point during that double turn, you're going for Archeon, so I wanted him to fight back after he died.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, it was some of the base spells from the Gaunt Summoner, just trying, if I could stop that unit of Savage Orcs from moving for your next 2 turns, I didn't have to commit to them.
No.
And I could start charging other things. Unfortunately, I think I caused 1 wound, didn't I? So it wasn't enough to stop you from moving.
No.
So then I had to commit a unit of...
You had to charge them.
Because you could really have just sat on whichever was high scoring and had that for a couple of turns, because I wouldn't have been able to chew through that many.
No.
Luckily for me, I didn't need to do that because they didn't last too long following this.
No.
So all of Arengard charge, I think, apart from a unit that was just on hovering right around flank. The far one.
Yeah.
Archeon went in as well. He failed his charge on a double one. I thought, oh, that's okay. Don't have to commit him at this point. But I gave in to the will of the chat because they want to see Archeon in combat, and he barreled into some...
I think it's probably a good job he did.
I think it is, because I don't think that battle might have gone in your favour without him.
Yeah.
So he went forward. The Furies just repositioned the idea of drawing you in and falling back like they normally do, just to be super annoying.
Mm-hmm.
The unit of Vanguard with Lancers did something like 26 damage to your Savage Orcs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, that was pretty good.
Yeah, and I wasn't... I think I'd failed to get Cunning Beast Spirits off again.
Mm-hmm.
So I think every hit you were doing, if you wounded, I didn't get a save. Just my 6+ feel no pain.
Yeah, on 4 damage each was just brutal.
Yeah.
You did a bit better with the Brutes, who managed to take out of Arengard, I believe.
Well, when you charged my Ard Boys, you had one Varangard that wrapped round, connecting with the Brutes.
Yeah, I was conscious of the fact that if I could just tag them and weather their attacks, I could do a load of damage on the Brutes and then pile them a second time and finish whatever was there.
But luckily, actually, the Brutes did quite a lot of damage to the Varangard.
Yeah.
Whereas between Archeon and the Varangard, my Ard Boys just dissipated.
Yeah.
My Brutes did okay.
I think you did right going with them first, because otherwise I could have maybe got 2 pals in with that unit, but I think you eventually killed them.
Yeah.
And the 300 points, I can't really throw away units of Varangard either.
No. I think you only killed one Brute as well.
I didn't kill too many of them. So the Brutes got off okay. I think they had 3 models left in the unit when all the fighting had stopped. The Ard Boys were dead, weren't they?
Yeah.
Between the other unit of Arengard and Archeon. Because I didn't want you to have the numbers to take objectives, I piled in a second time with the Lancers, and I think that finished the unit of Savage Uruks as well.
Yeah.
Just because I knew it's 2 player turns until I get my turn now, because you've got the double turn. Yeah. I just have to make sure that you haven't got the numbers.
Yeah. By the end of that turn, I was looking down at the board, and I didn't have much left. I had my Prophet, all my leaders were still alive. I had Iron Skulls boys who were getting annoyed with the Furies.
Yep.
And I had 3 Brutes and my Maw Crusher. That was it.
Yeah.
So when it came around to my turn, Archeon had to die. If I'd have killed Archeon, then your Varangard, from the practice games, your Varangard suddenly get a lot less punchier.
Yeah.
When they're not getting the rear wall ones to hit, they're not getting the +1 to hit, you've lost the spellcaster, so you might not have got Infernal Blades and such.
So they get +1 to hit if he's on the board. They get to reroll ones to hit for the Aura of Khorne. They get +1 to wound from the Aura of Khorne. And like you say, that +1 damage from the spell. So he's a massive force multiplier.
So I had to do some adjusting so that my Maw Crusher could charge him, which he did. The Brutes charge the back of Archeon, just in case. Attacks from the Maw Crusher wasn't enough to kill him. Which, as we'll soon find out, was a good move.
Yeah.
So the Maw Crusher, I mean, there was not a lot else to say on my turn, really.
This was probably my favourite turn of the game, though, because it was just epic.
For you, maybe. I was trying to sort out the Furies on the other side. The Prophet was on his way over there. The War Chanters, they buffed the Maw Crusher. One of them buffed himself. It was all really down to this combat. If I'd have killed Archeon, if my Maw Crusher had still got quite a lot of health, he would have potentially gone on then and just killed the rest of Matt's units, and hopefully I'd have just worn on, then you not being able to get more points because everything would be dead. So my Maw Crusher went first. The -1 to hit, even though by this point I was hitting on 2s, wounding on 2s, I was hitting on 3s because of Archeon's spell. That meant, I think, half of his attacks missed because I rolled a lot of 2s, which normally is fine, but not in this game. Still did quite a bit of damage. The Mighty Fist did a load of damage.
It did.
I think pretty much all those hit. I took Archeon down with his attacks, the destructive bulk, and all the other stuff that's going on. I took him down to 4 wounds. Archeon had 4 wounds left.
So I'm 20 starting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, I've done 16 damage to him. So I've got him down to 4 wounds left. You then had to make a decision on who went next.
Yeah, so my original plan was go with the Furies, consolidate that objective. I think it was still worth 3 points at that point,
yeah,
and be well ahead on points. I thought, you know what, I need to sacrifice these points. It was 10-1 at that point. I had a comfortable lead. I can sacrifice those 3 points just to make sure that Archaon kills the brutes that were behind him, because I was concerned that they can do a lot of damage on the charge.
They would have eased those 3 brutes. Easily would have got rid of those 4 wounds.
I wasn't going to attack the more crush because he had the ethereal amulet, so I thought it was a waste of attacks. But then I thought, you know what? Let's throw the Slayer of Kings on the more crusher. On the off chance that I can trap him in the sword, Dorgar's attack should deal with the brutes. That should take them all out.
Yeah.
So Archaon attacks, hits with everything. Awesome, happy days. He rolls to wound, gets 2 ones, but crucially 2 sixes. Trapping the more crusher in the
my
sword.
My completely undamaged, spotless Maw Crusher, my last hope of getting a victory in this game, swallowed by a fucking sword.
Needless to say, Wade and Ben went mental on the commentary.
Yeah, I mean, it's great for, like, everybody watching. And I smiled, I was crying on the inside, but I was, you know, being the honourable opponent, it happened.
But Dorgar, unfortunately, didn't do as well as his master.
No, he killed.
He left a single brute on 1 wound.
Yeah. Who then proceeded, well, after other combat stuff, then proceeded to finish off. 1 brute finished off Archaon.
Did he pick up his sword afterwards?
No, because Archaon got
boss,
to fight after.
Boss, boss, can you hear me?
When I killed Archaon, he had that.
My will be done.
So he then put every single attack on the brute.
Killed the poor
brute. Battered the brute. And unfortunately, that pretty much ended
sealed
the game.
Your doom.
And you were really unlucky on the 3-point objective because you'd killed 3 Furies.
Yeah.
But the bravery 10, so they weren't running away.
No.
And crucially, when they powered in, they killed one of Ironskull's boys, so you hadn't captured that objective either.
Yeah. Yeah.
You had the double turn, but there wasn't a lot left to do with it then.
So you want something then?
No. At that point, I was like, do I concede? Because I can't get enough points back here. But for the good of the stream, I was like, no, let's go for some honourable points here. So I teleported a War Chanter over to charge the Gaunt Summoner. I think I charged the other ones into the unit of Varengard that had been on the right-hand flank. The Prophet went to help the Ironskull's boys to kill those Furies. All that really happened in that turn is the War Chanter did make his charge on the Gaunt Summoner.
Yep.
I think everybody was willing the Gaunt Summoner with his one attack to get a 6 to wound my War Chanter, thus killing him instantly. But that didn't happen.
No, you got 5. You did go a bit pale when I rolled that dice.
Yeah, I did see a 6, but it kept rolling. But I did fail to kill the Gaunt Summoner, which was a shame.
And then I think my guys just kind of mopped up what was left.
Your Varengard turned around and killed the War Chanter. And at that point I conceded, because that was it. I'd only got Ironskull's boys and a Prophet on the left-hand side of the board. That's all I had left.
It was a nice little kind of look into the new Slaves of Darkness book, though. I mean, it was one specific build of the Slaves of Darkness, but there's a lot of talk about them. It's quite a low model count army in a game system where bodies on objectives count.
Yeah.
I think the changes to Varengard means that they can do an awful lot of damage. You know, that 3 Varengard against 30 Savage Orcs, you'd think it'd be in the Savage Orcs' favour, they'd hang around a lot, but the fact they compile in twice and do all that damage just evaporated them.
Yeah.
Summoning, I think Furies are the pick over summoning some demons, just because of how annoying Furies are.
The manoeuvrability is a useful thing to have, isn't it, in Age Sigmar?
Mm-hmm.
I think using the Pink Horrors in the first game, because you didn't really need that manoeuvrability.
I needed the numbers in that game.
So I think the Pink Horrors were a good... either them or Plague Bearers would have been a good bet.
Yeah, I forgot to pack my Plague Bearers, so that's when I went in the Horrors.
Okay.
But the Horrors gave me an extra spell cast and some ranged shooting as well, just to keep you at bay.
So unfortunately it wasn't quite the game that I'd hoped for. I'd hoped it had been a bit of a closer back, because a lot of our games have been super close. That wasn't really... Well, it wasn't super close
at all. What I think your downfall was? Not being more aggressive turn one.
Not channeling your inner orc.
It let me get into position and charge.
Now, see, I disagree. I know Ben was saying I should have charged my Maw Crusher into the Varengard. Yeah, I would have done a lot of damage to the Varengard, but I know that if Archaon had charged the Maw Crusher, he'd have more than likely killed him. Okay. If not with the Slayer of Kings, but from other spells.
At which point, I'd have lost the Baron Guard, you'd have lost the Moor Crusher, but crucially, you'd have still had 30 Savage Oryx to sit on objectives.
I would have only killed one unit of Baron Guard, I think. Yeah, well, in all the practice games, my plan had worked. The Moor Crusher charging Archeon when the right opportune moment arrived. What really hurt me was that double turn.
Yeah.
You murdered my army in that double turn.
I think the most powerful ability in that book is Archeon knowing who gets the double turn.
Yeah. Knowledge is power.
Well, exactly, yeah. If I know...
Also, knowledge is power, and also the Slayer of Kings.
And the Slayer of Kings, yeah. Now, you could argue that, is it too powerful, the fact that you can just auto-kill a character?
It had not happened before.
No.
I don't know what the odds are rolling 2 sixes on 4 dice. Granted, you get the 4, because you've got 4 attacks, hasn't
you? You've got 4 attacks, wow. Rewatching the game, he should have had 5 attacks because of the rune.
Sigil, yeah.
So the odds are
pretty good. He can reroll ones.
Yeah.
And if take ones to hit, yeah. If you take, I think it's the War Shrine allows you to reroll wounds, but at that point, you've not got a lot of points to play with. No. You probably want the Gaunt Summoner for some magical support and that summon to get some more models.
And not everybody has a big Moor Crusher in the list that makes a suitable target. You might be fighting a Night Goblin army.
Well, yeah, it only affects heroes now as well. So your big monsters, if you'd have taken some, what are they called? The big totem things.
Rogue Idol.
Rogue Idols. In the old rules, he could trap them in the sword. He can't anymore. It's only
because
he has
another hero keyword.
Maybe you should have jumped off your Moor Crusher and sent your Moor Crusher in.
Yeah.
A pet Moor Crusher.
It was fun. I'm sure the stream had lots of fun watching the action unfold. The Slaves to Darkness, maybe I gave him that victory because he got a new battle tome.
Yeah, you could say that. You say that, Dave.
I had a turn where, I know you should never complain about your dice rolls, but I think it was my second turn, my dice rolls were flipping awful.
Yeah, there's a bit of superstition about the dice on Warhammer Live, where the red dice apparently are really good and the black dice are really bad.
Really rubbish. I can clarify that is absolutely 100% correct. I was tempted to use my Sprues and Brews dice, but they were there, and I thought, I'll use the Warhammer TV dice.
You should have trusted the Sprues and Brews
dice.
Yeah. My favourite quote of the day was from Ben, who at one point goes, "Oh, Dave, I just want to give him a cuddle."
Yeah, I was still smiling.
You did make your charges, though.
That worked out okay for you.
Yeah, I did make him.
Charging onto the point of the Slayer of Kings.
Yeah. Anyway, if you watched the stream, I hope you had fun. If you haven't watched it, you can watch it back on Twitch. If you go on to twitch.tv/Warhammer, you can subscribe to the channel, either with funds, like actual money.
Actual
money. Or if you've got an Amazon Prime account, you can actually get one subscription for absolutely nothing. So that's what I do. That's how I watch all the Warhammer streams. So you can go back and you can watch Matt battering my Oryx on live, because it was fun. It was fun.
Yeah, and Wade invited us back on next year at some point.
Yeah, for a rematch. Well, Matt, let's not end this segment without saying you're now 5 out of 5.
4 out of 4.
4 out of 4, is it? Oh, sorry. 4 out of 4 wins on Warhammer Live.
Yeah.
I think we need to see the Sylvaneth on there against you. Maybe Jake in turn can break that record. Alariel slaying
Alariel,
whatever you take.
Yeah, Alariel and all your tree men in the Slayer of Kings.
Right, let's wrap up this section. We've still got quite a bit to get through, including our favourite Sprues and Brews, but we're going to take a pause and come back with the Slaves to Darkness Battletome. So, we've had quite a few battle tomes this year. It's been a very good year for Age of Sigmar. And just when we thought the year was over without getting a new Chaos book, up pops the Slaves of Darkness battle tome with only weeks to go before Christmas.
Yeah, well, they promised us a book for every Grand Alliance and they did not disappoint.
No, they did not.
And yeah, the Slaves, we're not going to go too in-depth into this one because it's going to be a really long episode otherwise. Yeah. We just want to kind of go over our kind of initial vibe and thoughts on it. We had a few practice games, obviously, the other day, in one very specific build. What's good about this book is there's a few different kinds of lists you can build, which is really nice. It's something that we've seen in all the battle tomes and something that sets the newer ones apart from the really old books, which really are kind of a bit restricted in how you can build them. The abilities aren't quite as good. So essentially, when you build your list, you have to pick one of 4 legions. The Ravagers, The Cableist, The Despoilers, or The Host of the Ever Chosen? Host of the Ever Chosen, we've already talked about that, is Archeon and Friends. Essentially, it makes Varangard really, really good because they get an additional keyword, such as plus one damage on the charge. There is about seven or eight of them that you can have, though, including letting them fly, which is pretty cool. Flying Varangard could be handy. Reroll hit and wound against heroes or monsters is very good as well. You can increase the amount of models that run from Battleshock, which combos really well with Archeon's minus two bravery aura. I think the best one is the extra damage, just because it stacks so well with the lances.
It's useful against anything that is, isn't it?
You can make terrain deal out mortal wounds to enemy units. I think the six circle's really good. You can... There is a battalion that lets you pick an additional circle.
Oh, right, that's good.
But you haven't really got enough points in that build, unless you don't take Varangard, which kind of defeats the object of taking that build, to put it in. Really, your three builds that you could take are Archeon and four units of Varangard, or Archeon, three units of Varangard, the Gaunt Summon, and Endless Spell, or Archeon, three units of Varangard in the battalion. I think I'd rather take an extra unit of Varangard or the Gaunt Summoner.
Could you take Archeon, one unit of Varangard, and then Chaos Warriors for your battle?
You could do, but you're kind of missing out on the buffs that you get for doing it.
Does that one unit of Varangard still get those buffs, though?
Yeah, so you have all Varangard in the list get them.
Okay, so I could do that. Because
you'd have a seriously hard unit of Varangard.
The main benefit of Host of the Everdune is the ability to see who gets the next turn.
Yeah, because I was thinking, there doesn't seem to be any builds themed around Chaos Warriors.
Well, what you could do is not take any Varangard. Take it. I think if you're taking Archeon, this is a good pick. This build. Your abilities that you unlock by taking Host of the Ever Chosen is the Dark Prophecy, where you can see who gets the turn.
Yeah.
Your aura for Archeon, which I went for Khorne because I think that's the strongest
which
one.
Which would affect Chaos Warriors.
Yep, becomes an 18-inch bubble, which is a massive bubble around Archeon because it's got a big base.
Yeah.
No Host of the Ever Chosen units on the battlefield take Battleshock while Archeon's on the board.
So your Chaos Warriors are not running anywhere.
Completely immune to Battleshock. And you pick a unit each hero phase. You can reroll hits and attacks of one against that unit.
Okay. So I could take Archeon, a unit of Varangard, and then Chaos Warriors and Knights.
Yeah, I mean, you could drop the Varangard and just take Chaos Warriors and Knights.
Yeah, because I like the Chaos Warriors, but I couldn't see an army theme in there that buffed Chaos Warriors directly. There doesn't seem to be one.
That'd work well with them because they ignore the battle shot. Yeah, so you can nominate a unit you reroll and once to hit and wound against them. You're already getting, if you take Khorne, for example, you're already getting the reroll once to hit and the plus one to wound.
That might be the one I look
pretty at. Good. You don't get any unique artifacts. But, you know, you can take all the malign sorcery ones.
And there are artifacts in there as well, isn't
there? So, yeah, that's not a bad shout. The other builds that we've got are the Ravagers. So these are the kind of barbarian tribe kind of vibe for them. You can't take your battle trait on a demon prince. Essentially, you want your mortal kind of characters.
Yeah.
It lets you take five different command traits on people that aren't your general. So if you max out and take six heroes, all of them can have a command trait.
That's cool.
Once per turn, you can also make a different one your general.
Yeah.
Each general, once per turn, can summon a unit of 10 marauders, 5 marauder horsemen, or 10 warcry warriors.
That's cool.
Each general can do it once, but because you can rotate your generals means that over the course of the game, you can have 50 additional guys turn up for the battle, which is really, really cool.
Yeah.
They seem really fun. I think they'd work well for your Warcry, Tribes, Marauders kind of vibe.
Yeah.
They're
pretty quick, aren't they?
Yeah, pretty good. That'd work with your Chaos Warriors and Chaos Knights thing. It means that you can get some reinforcements appearing as well.
Yeah.
And it means that if you went for multiple Chaos kind of Lord models, they all get command traits as well, and they're pretty good. Plus two wounds, you can use Inspiring Presence, Forge of Victory, or at the double without spending a command point, which is very good.
Nice.
You can add or remove from the result of the Gods table, where you could get promoted to Demonhood.
This is, yep.
You can reroll wound attacks for guys made by the general, or reroll hits against order, which, considering I think most armies on the battlefield are order, statistically, mm-hmm. is pretty good. Any wound of 6 does a mortal wound in addition to damage, and subtract 1 to hit him. And because of this build, all your heroes can take them. You can take all those command traits across your army. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah.
They get some unique weapons as well. So Hellfire Sword, pick a unit within 8 inches in their shooting phase. They take D3 mortal wounds. Pretty good. Subtract 2 for casting wounds from wizards, and add wound to attacks that target a wizard. So anti-wizard kind of stuff. So they seem really fun. I think they'd work for any kind of build.
Mm-hmm.
More so for your tribes, but I think that'd easily work for your army, Jay.
Yeah, I'll look at that one then.
And then you've got the Warcry gangs that you can bring in as reinforcements. You've got the Cabalists, who are your magic shenanigans guys. These guys can sacrifice their own guys in order to stop endless spells. They can sacrifice their own guys to add 1 to casting rolls. They're pretty cool.
Seems like a very Skaven-y type.
Yeah, you can sacrifice your guys to move an endless spell. So Dave summons an endless spell in your hero. Say if you went second. So Dave goes, you get to move the endless spell because you went second. And in your turn, you can sacrifice some guys and move the endless spell again. Just being really, really annoying. You can also, there's also another unique spell they've got, which you cause mortal wounds and then reduce their movement by the number of mortal wounds they take. So yeah, lots of control, lots of magic shenanigans. They seem pretty cool, but they're not my favourite one. And then there's the Demon Prince one, the Despoiler, where your Demon Princes get some new abilities. They can ignore more, wounds on mortal wounds on a 5. They seem really cool. My favourite is Host They Ever Chosen, just because that fits with the models that I've got.
Yeah.
I think if you take an Archeon, that command ability, Dark Prophecy, adds so much benefit
yeah.
to him. I think it's a no-brainer.
Yep.
But I think my next Chaos Army build is going to be the Hordes.
The Ravages.
With extra Ravages coming each time.
Warcry Bands.
Warcry Bands, yeah. With lots of Furies because of the race. So in addition to these, each of your heroes picks a Mark of Chaos. And you don't have to have it the same across all your whole army. You get little bubbles of rerolls depending on what you want to do. So Chaos, we've mentioned, you reroll 1s to hit. If your general's got it, you add 1 to wound. Zinch, reroll saves of 1. If your general's got it, the aura ignores spells and endless spells on a 5+, which is pretty powerful. Aura of Nurgle, if the unmodified wound roll is a 6, plus 1 damage. If your general's got it, the aura also is subtract 1 to hit for missile weapons, which against some of the Cities of Sigmar armies could be really, really good.
Yeah.
Slaanesh, essentially it's the Slaanesh ability. On a 6, you do 2 hits. If it's your general, the aura lets you run in charge. Really good thing is you can mix and match those across your heroes. So you could have little groups of units doing bespoke things.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I think the most benefit is marking everything one thing. So,
yeah.
Say if you've got Archeon with Khorne, everything Khorne marked does extra, you know, it's more efficient, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But I think with some clever list building, you could mix and match these, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Or you can have them undivided, which is basically a 6+ shrug.
Feel no pain.
If your general's got it. And then the general one, if your hero's got it, is ignore Battle Shock.
Okay, that's pretty powerful.
So, yeah, there's a few things you can do, and there's some quite cool list building in there. Onto the units, there's quite a few new units, mostly in all the new Warcry stuff that we've seen.
Yeah. Are they all battle line?
None of them are battle line.
None of them are battle
line. None of them are battle line, but you can take Varangard as battle line if you're host of the Ever Chosen, your Marauders, your Chaos Warriors, your Chaos Knights are battle line.
Cool.
Marauders seem really, really good now. It's just a shame that the models aren't quite so good these days.
Yeah, the old models aren't. The Horsemen are okay.
Horsemen are really nice. Marauders are very, very good. I think you should start a Marauder army, Dave.
Is this because they charge a lot?
This is because they are amazing at charging. So, Boundless Ferocity. When you make a charge roll for this unit, change the lowest dice to a 6. So their minimum charge is 7 inches.
Okay, that's pretty
the
good.
The Dark Oath War Queen gives them +3 to charge. Huh. Their drummer gives them plus one to charge. So base just them alone, their minimum charge is 8 inches.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Their maximum charge is bananas.
It's bananas.
So you can get them behind people onto objectives.
Yeah.
And they're dirt cheap as well. Marauders for... let's double check what they are. Marauders. 20 marauders is 150 points. So that seems really kind of efficient for a big block of guys.
Yeah.
Considering you can summon these as well with one of the Ravagers build.
Are the models that bad now? Are they that sort of aged?
I think they're quite dated compared to some of the ones.
They remind me of the old Catachan models.
I was hoping that the Warcry units become variants of Marauders. They've all got their own profiles, and some of them seem really good. Considering, again, you can just throw a unit in with your free summon as well. Furies are a standout unit we mentioned in the battle report section. The fact that they can make a move instead of fighting means they can just hop, and they're flying as well. You can hop over things, steal objectives. Yeah. They're very difficult to pin down.
No save, so when you do punch them, they die.
They just evaporate when you punch them, but they're pretty cool. We've got the two new monsters out of Warcry that aren't even out yet. The Mind Stealer Sphyranx, which is an awesome looking thing. In your hero phase, you pick one enemy unit. You both pick a result of the dice and hide it. If you reveal them and they're the same, nothing happens. If they're different, the enemy unit fights last at the end of the combat phase. So you can make that keeper of secrets. That's just made you fight last as well. You can do some shenanigans. There's a spell that lets you fight last as well, so you can again dictate the flow of the battle. It's also got a -2 bravery aura, which will stack with Archeon's -2 bravery aura,
yeah,
which will stack with one of the circles that makes extra models flee in Battleshock.
Wow.
So there's quite a few recent books with those bravery bombs, so you've got to be careful.
Yeah.
Which makes the Everchosen build, where they don't take any Battleshock, really good as well.
Yeah.
We've got the Formeroid Crusher, which is the big brutish ogre thing. That looks really good. It does impact hits on its charge. Essentially, you rolled an 8 for your charge, you roll 8 dice, each 6 is a mortal wound.
Brill.
So like ogres, basically. And if it's near a terrain feature, it can punch the terrain feature, and on a 3+, every enemy unit within 6 inches takes D3 mortal wounds. So, Sylvaneth Wildwoods, yeah, they'll just punch them and do wounds to the people inside.
So if those trees annoy you, this is the only unit currently that can punch actually trees. Hurt trees.
So yeah, they seem really cool, and I don't think they're too expensive either. And nice, they look really nice, the model. So
yeah,
I think chariots are battle line as well. So oh, I think cool. I'll take some chariots as like the cheapest battle line unit, and then all the Warcry bands and monsters and furies and stuff for a cool list. Yes. The X-Men the spells as well. We mentioned the Doom Sigil, which is cool, kind of a extra attack aura thing, which is really cheap. It's like 40 points.
Yeah,
you've got the Demon Rift, which it kind of moves along and does damage to things, which is pretty cool.
Is that the one that looks like a flame barricade? Thrower. Oh, that's the flamethrower one.
And then there's the Rupture, which again moves and does damage, but like the Pendulum, it always moves in the same direction, so you've got a bit of control over making sure it doesn't hit your own guys.
Yeah.
The Demon Rift is really cool because it does D3 more wounds, which isn't a lot, but for each wizard or endless spell within 12 inches of it, it gets an additional mortal wound caused. So if you're fighting the super magic-y Cities of Sigmar build that everybody loves with all of the wizards and all of the endless spells, you throw that thing into them and it does a load of damage.
Yeah.
You could potentially take out the entire enemy army's wizard contingent.
Yeah, with that guy,
which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So it's good to see that. In these recent books, there's counters to some of the ridiculous builds that we've seen. shifting the meta, as the kids would call it.
Yes, they would.
So, yeah, so it seems a solid book. It's good that Slaves of Darkness have got something to play with now. It's good that Archeon finally has the keyword, so you can take him in a competitive army with some other people.
Yeah.
Which was always something that was not great about the old one. I really like it. I think there's lots of options and lots of things you can do with it.
Well, and also, you can take that book and you can grab the Disciples of Zeech, you can grab the Blades of Khorne, and you can make a crazy Chaos
Army. Yeah, majority of stuff in this book can be marked to one of the Chaos Gods, which means you can then take him in the Khorne army list if you wanted to.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
Yeah. Cool.
So that's a quick overview of Slaves to Darkness. I think once we've had a bit of a play with some different army lists over the new year, we'll probably come back with some different builds that you can do. But at the minute, I'm loving the Ever Chosen.
And I'm used to fighting them now, after all the practice I've had over the last few days. Thanks a lot, Matt. We are going to move on next to our... Well, it's not a top three this week. It's just top ones.
It's an oldie but goodie.
It's an oldie but goodie, so stay with us. So, it is that time of the podcast where normally we'd have a top three, but this week we're going to do things slightly different. So, Matt, you're constantly asking on the Twitch stream what everybody's favourite Sprue and Brew is. Everybody we interview, we always ask them what their favourite Sprue and Brew is. And now, here on the podcast, we're going to reveal our latest, because I mean, we've done this before, but our latest favourite Sprue and Brew each. Not necessarily from this year, could be from whenever.
So in some cases, they might not even be out yet.
So, do you want to start us off, Matt, with your favourite sprue and your favourite brew?
Well, my favourite sprue at the minute is the Triumph of St. Catherine. This is an absolutely gorgeous model, and I hope it's like early January, because I can't wait to build it.
Yeah.
I've got a feeling it probably will be.
Yeah,
you've not seen it in the flesh yet, have you?
No, just seen photos.
Such a good model, Dave.
It was a very cool model, yeah. Like a mini diorama.
Yeah.
Looking forward to charging that with a Patriarch.
You can try.
I'm looking forward to seeing that.
For favourite brew, we're going to go with a caramel latte, a classic.
Caramel latte. Nice. My favourite sprue, normally it's the Death Watch one, is my go-to one, because I like its versatility and all the different pieces you get on it. But I want to pick one from this year, and it's only a singular model, and I actually mentioned on Twitch stream as well. It's the Nexus model from Gene Stealer Cults.
It is really cool.
And you know why I really like this model? Because I really like the fact that it's got a little hologram table, and it's of Warhammer World.
Even down to the rhino parked outside.
Yeah, I think that is such a fantastic little Easter egg. I think it's brilliant. And he's a really cool-looking guy. He's got a really useful ability in-game. It's also my next project, which also helps. Yeah, no, you can't really do anything with this brew apart from build that one guy. But I think it's a really cool model. My favourite brew is one that I've enjoyed for quite some time now, and that is a hazelnut latte.
Oh.
I had one yesterday for the first time in ages. What were you shaking your head at? Do you like it?
You two, your lattes and your frappuccinos.
Well, yeah, I think it's a very nice brew. If I was to go alcoholic, I'd be tempted to go for an ale, of which I did have a Bugman's.
I thought you just said, if I was to go alcoholic, I decided to turn into an alcoholic.
I had a Bugman's ale whilst we were... In fact, I had two while we were...
Maybe that's why you lost.
I only had one by the time we went on the stream. It's a really nice beer.
He had one before the battle, and then you had to drag him out of Bookman's bar, drowning in his sorrows afterwards.
Jay, what is your favourite sprue and brew?
My favourite sprue is an oldie. One of the ones that actually got me into this army in the first place.
Okay.
And it is the old Dwarf Lord sculpt, where he's leaning on his big two-handed axe, holding his helmet. It's just like that. It's your typical Dwarf Lord right there. Yeah. I used him as my Thane, Grimbolt Boulder Balls.
Grimbolt Boulder Balls. Warhammer Fantasy.
Yeah.
The legend that is.
The legend. He's got a lot of grudges in the grudge book. Awesome model. Man, I wish they made dwarves like that still.
They might do soon.
Sniff. So that's that one. And my favourite brew is not a fancy frappuccino. It is... a good old Yorkshire tea.
Yorkshire tea.
Good old Yorkshire tea.
Are other brands of tea are available?
No. But they're not as good.
Sprues and Brews, sponsored by Yorkshire Tea.
I'd love to have Sean Bean on this podcast. He's their advert now, isn't he?
Give me a cup of Yorkshire tea and a Dwarf Lord, and I'm happy.
And he's happy. Brilliant. Okay, right. We have got one last part of this... our last podcast of 2019, so we've got your community picks coming up next. As always, you guys haven't let us down with your choices. We're going to start over on Facebook. Daz Brain says, finally I can answer. Yay, was hoping you'd ask when I was on AOS Wednesday on Warhammer TV. Well, you mustn't have been in the stream for that.
I was. Yeah, unfortunately did not ask him.
Favourite sprue is the Rotgut Trogoth kit. Yeah, very epic. Nice. And my favourite brew is either a Monster Energy drink or a nice cold pint of lager. You want to try an ale? Honestly, it's changed my life. The much more drunk than I used to be. Chris Spurgeon says, brew ginger Pepsi.
Ginger Pepsi,
yeah,
is a
that's
thing.
A new thing. I saw is that a new thing? Yeah.
I wouldn't mind trying that.
And a cinnamon Coke as well for both sides of the cola spectrum.
I like cherry Coke. That's nice. But ginger's Pepsi, I'm going to have to look for that. Sprue, I have fond memories of the classic close combat weapon sprue from 40k 2nd edition. I got so much use out of those. And he's put a picture on there as well.
Oh, nice.
There you go.
This was one that was bundled with your characters and stuff.
Yeah. So, that is cool. Moving on to Instagram, Disciple of Zafan. Third choice, Nurgle Marine Sprue. Second choice, Zone Mortalis.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And one, the Skull Sprue.
The Skull Sprue? I've not actually picked up one of them yet.
No, neither have I.
As a devotee of Khorne, I feel I've, I need to make amends there.
They've also got three choices for their brew. Their third choice is a ginger tea. The second is a Coors Light, and the top choice is a BrewDog Punk IPA, which I have had, and I can confirm it's very nice. Skulled Painting says, even though there's no leftovers for converting, I really like Push Fits brews. They are genius. Best brew, Fuller's Honeydew. First brew me and my wife drank on our honeymoon in London. We are from Sweden.
There you go.
Very nice choices. Matt, you've got a few on Twitter.
I have. So HPL says the Nighthorn Black Coach and Young's Winter Warmer.
Yeah, okay.
There you go. Andy Wood, controversy from Andy Wood here. So Sprue is the Squig Herd. Yeah, I'm with you there. Nice. You might just want to cover your ears here, Jay. Oh, brew PG tips.
This is a joke, though, isn't it? That's a joke. Does he scroll down? Scroll down. He must have his real answer.
Unfortunately not. Fabius Fulgrim says, a good cup of oolong tea and the House Cawdor kit to make some cool Thousand Suns courtiers. That's a good idea.
That's a very good idea.
Pete Allison, Sprue, Necromunda Cawdor, such versatility across multiple systems, and brew, Costa, Black Forest, Hot Chocolate, other coffee shops are available.
But you might not be able to get that particular brew.
No, maybe not. Cy the Ogre, Sprue, the Empire Free Company / Peasants. I love that sprue. Brew, coffee in the day and Peroni in the evening. Though, after submitting this the following day, they said they've just opened the Thousand Suns Sorcerer box and changed their mind. Thousand Suns Sorcerer Sprue for the win. That's a tongue twister and a half.
It is.
Andrew B-Fab says the Death Company box and coffee. Chrissy says Drazar and Tetley's biscuit brew.
Not tried that one, to be fair.
No, neither have I.
Mike Lodes says the Keeper of Secrets and any coffer but Mocker is my favourite. Hot Lutonium Gravy says the Stern Guard. That is a classic sprue.
I thought that was his favourite brew then.
Yeah, so
that.
And Yorkshire, only one that will go do my mug the right colour with one bag.
Exactly.
He likes a strong brew then.
Noob Merry Grotmas Painter, sprue, the Adeptus Titanicus Warlord Titan, well crafted and made to be modular with magnets. Yeah, really good one. And they rarely drink, but a bottle of Stroop Waffle Liqueur. That sounds good, doesn't it?
It does.
Yannafal says the Archmagos himself, call and brew Happen Harry's Tennessee Lager. The Lil Mech says Orc Knobs and Bark's Root Beer. And Chris Denmark, the Rotgut Trogoth, Smashing Kit and a Joy to Build. Brew Chocchiato. Perfect seasonal drink with a hint of productivity. Have a great Christmas. And on that bombshell, that is the favourite sprue and brew of the community this Christmas.
Excellent. We are going to be back in the new year, so what is going to be our first top three of 2020?
Well, it's a new year and a time for making hobby resolutions, so we want to know your top three hobby resolutions. We'll also, if I remember to listen back to the episode, be looking back on the ones we made last year and seeing if we managed to achieve them.
No, I didn't manage. Guys, it's been a fantastic 2019.
It's been emotional.
Thank you for all your support, for listening to this show. We wouldn't be doing it as regularly as we do without you guys enjoying the podcast, We've really had a really good 2019, and we're really looking forward to an even better 2020. So we hope you'll stay on this journey with us as we delve deeper into the worlds of Warhammer and all the different things that come with it. And yes, have a fantastic Christmas, an amazing new year, and we'll be back in January.
See you later.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Ho, ho, ho.
Thank you for listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast. If you like what you've been listening to, please do give us a share and a comment if you're listening via Apple Podcasts. For further content, please check out spruesandbrews.com, and you can contact us on Twitter @spruesandbrews or over on Facebook, facebook.com/spruesandbrews.